The Guardian.
Euro 2012 Football Daily with James Richardson from The Guardian.
Euro 2012 Football Daily, the ninth day and the craziest day yet. As the Greeks go to the Poles are going nowhere, the Czechs are in the post, group stages, and the Russians, Moscow, home. The pod takes a moment to reflect on it all and says, Jonathan Wilson, how did we ever doubt you? Next up, Group B's grand finale. Who'll go through here? The Netherlands? The Danes, who beat them? The Portuguese, who beat them? Or, who knows, maybe even Germany? That and much more to be discussed in today's Football Daily. Hello, everybody. Here we are in Warsaw Botanical Gardens. They're lovely. Hi, Jacob Steinberg.
Hello, James Richardson.
Yes, and Paul McInnes is here too.
Hiya.
It's a packed pod because Evan Fanning's here as well.
Hello.
You certainly are. And my word, it's been an exceptional day. What a tournament this is. Even the so-called group of meh that they were calling it, the group that nobody was that bothered about, it comes up with an absolutely enthralling finale, Paul McInnes.
Yeah, I was under instructions to change game because I thought I'd like everybody I'd watch the Czechs and the Poles because that was going to be more interesting than watching the Russians roll over the
Who
Greeks.
Who told you to change game?
Producer Ben, of course. He's the man at the controls. And a pretty dire first half, all in all, was enlivened with about 20 seconds of added time remaining when Yuri Zhirkov completely ballsed up a header off a throw-in and let in Mr. Hot Temper Karagounis, who was in on goal and slammed it to the far post with no doubt at all through Malfeyev. And then the group turned on its head. The second half was totally compelling. The Greeks had more attacks than I'd seen them have in the rest of the tournament. The Russians lost it altogether. And despite throwing on Pav and Pob, they didn't get anywhere near, well, a whisker away from a header from Dzhagoev.
Dzhagoev, yeah, that came closer. But it was 4-1 to the Russians. They beat the Czech Republic 4-1. How did this happen?
You'll recall, because I was in here after the first round of these matches, and I was saying, as well as making up and inventing parts of Andrei Arshavin's career that didn't exist, I was saying that in that game, that 4-1 game, there were periods where the Russians were really complacent and were getting mugged by the Czechs, despite rolling them over.
Complacency
and just a little lack of direction as well. And I actually think, as odd as it might seem, taking off Kurzhikov at half-time was not a good idea. He bought Pav on instead of him, Vakar, and I suggest that maybe having another strike up there would have been a better option because Kurzhikov actually was combining well with his fellow attackers and they lost that altogether.
Well, Evan, you were doing minute by minute on this game. The Russians thought they were through. Was that the problem?
Well, they kind of did. I think, especially the first half, they had all the play from about 15 minutes in, but it was mainly long shots, and only once or twice did they kind of get in behind them and pull Greece apart. And then, as Paul said, Greece got the goal. I mean, I think this new Greece, 2004 Greece, was, you know, it was all set pieces. I think when this Greece, when they're trying not to score, that's when they're at their most dangerous. Because it was just a throw-in down the line. They were eating up time to get to half-time. It was injury time, and it was an aimless throw down the pitch. Zhirkov made a mess of it, and Karagounis scored on his record equaling 120th appearance.
Here's another record stat for him. He's been booked 8 times in just 10 European Championship finals appearances.
Yeah, and now he'll miss the next round, so he won't break the record.
That was unfortunate because he got a yellow card for simulation in the box when he was patently fouled for a penalty, but then he just lost his rag and was running around the pitch shouting his head off at everybody, and so had to be taken off to calm him down.
And then come the final, he was back on the pitch running around shouting his head off at everybody.
Children.
Amazing scenes.
With his children on the pitch.
Oh, were they there as well?
Yeah. They kind of formed a little circle around the kids and they all did a celebratory dance.
Smash some plates, that kind of thing.
Pretty much.
My word, but they were amazing scenes, were they not, at the end?
It was amazing scenes. I mean, I think it's a brilliant thing for the tournament in a way. We've had a lot of great games, but, you know, until there's this sense of jeopardy that there is in the final games final group games or knockout games, you don't know, you know, I think they decide whether or not it will be a memorable tournament. But that tonight was incredible. Greece were very good in the second half. I mean, I'm still not sure how they did it. They just had mass defence and Russia's kind of intricate game. They didn't really have anywhere to go when you know, there's bodies in the way all the time. They stepped it up a bit. They had a couple of chances, but Greece were kind of well worth it in their own way. But it was extraordinary tension and just drama in it.
A goal in either game would have changed everything. Our predictions last night, particularly wide of the mark. We all, four of us, said that Russia and Poland would be going through, and neither team do. Jonathan Wilson, of course, Alex Rapley salutes him on Twitter. Jonathan Wilson, big floating brain, and Guardian Paul the Octopus tribute act. Because not only did he have money on the Czechs to make it out of the group, but he was underlining that fact again. Yes, they well done to him. The Czechs actually topped the group with negative goal difference. Wolf Waterhouse pointing out on your minute by minute, Jacob.
Yep.
Surely a first in a major tournament.
I didn't go and check that out, but I imagine it probably was, yeah. It was a very strange game, this one, because Poland started off brilliantly. They missed a load of chances, particularly one through Lewandowski when he went through, slashed it past the post and when he thought he was going to score. And they had a host of other chances, and the Czechs were all over the place, and it looked for all the world like Poland were going to score. And then after about 20 minutes, they just kind of stopped playing. The belief started to go out of the Polish players, and the Czechs put maybe a bit more streetwise and more tournament savvy about them, although they're not a particularly great side, not a patch on the side of 2004 or even 1996, you know, with the likes of Nedved and Jan Koller and Poborski. But they started to take a grip on the game. Once they knew they had to score, they came forward more. Poland just offered absolutely nothing in the second half. The rabbits in the caught in the headlights, and then Juracek got the vital goal about 20 minutes to go.
And the final whistle blew with scenes of Polish players on their knees, destroyed by the realisation of what had just come to pass. And while we marvel at the Greek celebrations, of course, the terrible, terrible gloom which must settle now over the host nation of Poland. Let's dial up and riff on their pain a little with Greg Bukowski, who's in a typical Polish household with a typical Polish family. Find out what kind of typical Polish gnashing and wailing of teeth is going on. Greg, describe the scene in the house where you were watching that game.
Within 30 seconds of the match finishing, the host, Mateusz, he jumped onto his piano because it was a classical kind of cult type, and he started playing Chopin's Funeral March and switched the telly volume down, and it was utter desolation. It became a very sad scene in the household, I'm afraid.
They've had some disappointments already in this tournament, but coming into this game, what was the mood like in that house, in that street, and indeed across Poland, as far as you could tell? Were they optimistic they'd do it?
They were all very upbeat because they'd seen flashes against Greece, you know, the first 25 minutes, and against Russia, where they looked very good, and largely because their attacks had come down the right-hand side, and they were quite confident that the trio from Dortmund was enough in terms of going forward, that they could score the goals necessary against the Czechs, and they didn't really see much fear in the Czechs either. They really were expecting to go through to the quarterfinals, and that's why to actually lose the game, not even just draw and go out, lose the game and not even win a game that, you know, in a tournament that they hosted, was so disappointing for them. So, I mean, that's why he jumped on the piano and played a very sorrowful song at the end of that game.
Understandable. Those who weren't on the piano, who were they swearing at most?
They were actually swearing at Russia. They were swearing at Russia, and then when they found out that Russia weren't going through and hadn't qualified, that was the slightest shred of comfort for the Poles, because, I mean, obviously the game against Russia was a very fraught affair, and there's a lot of nasty stuff went on in Warsaw, and politically it's a very sensitive subject, and I think they really did take some comfort from the fact that Russia didn't go through. Even before this match, even though they played Russia and they were facing the Czechs, there's a lot of Poles who I'd spoken to who were saying that the flag, the eagle on the Polish flag, should not face Russia before this match because it would be a bad sign. And they would face it to the west rather than the east. So when they actually discovered that that Greece had gone through instead of Russia, they turned the television over and saw that result and were very happy about that. So, I mean, that's the very slightest shred of comfort, and I think that's all they can take.
All right. Well, listen, Greg, commiserations then to your Chopin-playing Polish friends. And Well, have a super rest of your trip there in Poland. Enjoy the rest of the tournament.
I will. I'm going to try and reconnect with my adopted Polish roots.
Euro 2012 Football Daily with AC Jimbo.
A couple of posts. Adam Marley says, who do we tweet questions, remarks, insights to get them read on the pod? Well, you just have, but you could also tweet them to @ACJimbo, then I get extra followers. Yeah, anyway, let's see. Some people talking about England. Zeb says, first time I've enjoyed watching England since 2004. True, it was a terrifically entertaining game. Chidozi has got lots of love for Theo Walcott. Any other footballer except him that would have greeted his goal in such a humble way? It was lovely, wasn't it? Yeah. Lovely boy.
It made Mark Lawrenson laugh.
Well, there you go.
Is that the first thing that's made him laugh all tournament?
Yeah.
Apart from his own jokes. Yes. And then Diana Pavi Delino says, hello, I've just joined you. So sorry if it's been asked already. Why biscotto significance? Biscotto means biscuit. This, of course, refers to a kind of a fixed game. Fixed not in the sense of bookies, but basically an arrangement between two teams who have a mutually beneficial result, and they both play for that. And it's called a biscotto because it comes from the world of horse racing. Because when there was a bit of dodginess going on in the horse racing and they were feeding illicit substances to horses, supposedly they would give the stuff on a little biscuit for the horse. Hi, Paul.
We have a biscuit game in England as well.
Okay. Stephen Barker said, Amy said in the pod that six men have played in four Euros, but only named five. Van der Sar, Melberg, Mateus, Turam, Del Piero, and who? Peter AG says, Peter Schmeichel. But hey, here's old odd jobs. He says, according to Wikipedia, Peter Schmeichel, yeah, but also Aaron Winter and Iker Casillas. That's not right, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, it is. So there's actually eight of them.
Yeah.
So far, impressive. There might be more.
Blame less impressive by the day.
Yeah? Wow.
Can I make one quick Russia
please,
point?
Please, Evan.
That's Dick Advocaat's last game in charge, because he's going to PSV Eindhoven, I think. Ah. So I would hope he packed up his stuff and got out of there before the tournament, because I can't imagine they'll be too pleased to see him back.
Not having much fun with Dutch coaches at the moment, are they, the Russians? Huh. Okay, now, next up, it's Group B. Of course, 20 years ago in the 1992 European Championship final, Denmark caused a shock of almost Greek scale by beating their neighbours Germany 2-0 in the final, and those two teams will meet in the big finale of Group B on Sunday. Raphael Honigstein now joins us. Raphael, I imagine after seeing what happened to Russia tonight, you must be very, very worried.
I'm not sure I'm quite that worried. I think Germany will take this game very seriously against Denmark. I think they make sure they win or at least get the draw that they need. They don't really have a habit of throwing these kind of last group games away. Even when they qualified in 2006, they went on to win the last game. And Lewis is the kind of guy that is striving for perfection. And he wants the perfect game and the perfect result every single time. So I think it'll be okay.
All right. Now, a lot of talk about the extraordinary Mario Gomez and various stats about him. He's managed to score three goals, but has only been in possession of the ball for 22 seconds so far.
I read 27 seconds. I'm not sure you are correct. You are depriving him of 5 seconds, which is a lot.
Right. 27 seconds.
Some of us.
Yeah.
For some of us, 5 seconds is all we need, James.
That's so true.
Well, he doesn't need a lot of touches to...
Neither do some of us.
Exactly, to score.
Yes, to finish.
Yes. This is all very
To stop someone having a clean sheet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shall I stop now? Yeah. Anyway, he's on amazing form. Is the real story the man behind him, as it were, Bastian Schweinsteiger? Is that what's making him such an efficient machine up front?
I'm not sure. I mean, Schweinsteiger, of course, had all the time in the world to pick out the passes in the game against the Dutch. So maybe it had more to do with Van Bommel not being there rather than Schweinsteiger being there. I think it's really down to two things. One, he's now scoring all the goals that he missed in more crucial games for Bayern and for Germany in the past. And of course, I think there is also this factor that you are aware that Mehmet Scholl, former Bayern Munich and Germany midfielder, heavily criticized him after the first game despite scoring the winner against Portugal, saying that he was lying around so much he was afraid he would get hurt and that they needed to turn him around so he didn't pick up any blisters. And I mean, Gomez did respond to that by actually running a lot more. Statistically, you can see it. There's about 10% more running from him. And also, I think, crucially, and this is a point that Schweinsteiger made, which you can read as a bit of from Gomez in the past, he said he made the kind of runs that you need as a midfielder to play the pass. And I think that's an accusation of Sandoval that Gomez in the past, that he provides a presence, he's up there, but he doesn't actually make those little runs that you need to give you an angle. He waits for the ball forcing far too much, and this time he didn't, and that's why he's going to stay in the team, despite perhaps Klose being more the striker, more the player that Lewis actually really likes.
Interesting.
Hi, Rafa. I was wondering what sort of team Germany are likely to put out tomorrow. Is there any chance that there'll be a couple of changes, maybe someone like Goetze or Schürrle coming in, or will it be the same kind of team that played against Holland and Portugal?
Yeah, well, he's already declared that Gomez will stick in the side, will continue to play. Of course, he has to change the right back. There's a few options he's got. The more interesting one would be to put Lars Bender in there. Don't laugh, James. Don't be so puerile with your sense of humour. This is a man's name, and there's absolutely nothing funny about it. He's from Leverkusen. He's a great midfielder. And Lewis sees him as a right back somehow. And it would be very interesting if he wants to do that. The more orthodox choice would be Benedikt of Schalke. There is a suggestion, you're right, that Royce might come in perhaps, but of course Podolski will have his 100th game, and I don't think that Löw will take that anniversary away from him, so he will start. So then he'd have to take out Müller, who's actually been pretty good. So I think we'll see more changes than in the past, than in the last two games, but I don't think the starting 11 will be looking too different.
Rafa, if Germany win, or if they stay on top of the group, they'll be facing Greece in the quarterfinals. Will that matchup be regarded as in some way significant in Germany?
I mean, you can hear all the Euro and debt jokes and all this kind of stuff already being written. Of course, Greece has its elections on Sunday. So, I mean, you're shaping up for a hell of a week for sort of German, Euro, stroke Greek relations. I think it'll be more of a grudge game, if you want, from the Greek perspective, of course, because the Germans will just turn up thinking that, this is a team that we can beat, that perhaps we should beat, and everything else doesn't really matter. But for them, it might have this extra political dimension, because, Germany are, of course, very much blamed for the political troubles there, for the austerity that Mrs. Merkel has imposed on the country. So, yeah, I'm sure they'll have political overtones, just the way that Poland, Russia had political overtones from both sides. But I think this time it'll be slightly one-sided, because I can't see what the German players would really think if they had any sort of special agenda. It's difficult to see how they would get emotionally involved in it.
Okay, then. So that could be one-sided, and the game could be as well. Just one last thing. Is there any potential weakness in this German team? You said before the tournament the fact they only had one Philipp Lahm, basically. Is that the only thing so far that you've seen to concern you?
Well, I mean, that's a huge thing. The problem on the left side of, or left or right, depending on Lahm plays. Now he's playing on the left, so the problem is currently on the right. And I think it is a problem. I mean, you saw Boateng being exposed at times against Cristiano Ronaldo. In the end, it didn't matter that much. He recovered. But I think that will be the key issue, especially if they come up against teams of strong wingers. I'm not sure Greece will pose that kind of problem, but we'll see. I mean, there isn't that much routine. There isn't that much experience when it comes to putting together in this back four. Hummels and Bartstuber have looked good so far, but they haven't actually played that much. And, if they were being put under pressure, some of the stuff that Greece did very well against Poland, for example, long balls, I can see them struggle a bit. So I don't think they're invincible by any means.
Right, okay. Well, of course, before that, you've got to get past Denmark and Nicholas Bentner. So, hey, fingers crossed for you then, Rafa. Fingers crossed.
Thank you, James.
Marvellous stuff, as ever, from Raphael of the Süddeutsche Zeitung, and of course, The Guardian.
And I suppose Jerome Boateng getting occasionally done by Cristiano Ronaldo is not like the massivist weakness in the history of a side.
But complacent, that's what I heard there. Mm. I heard complacency.
Yeah, the Germans famous for it.
Yeah, there you go. Still, it's just been a championship of surprises, you know. It's been a season of surprises. Hmm. Anyway, in the other group game, of course, you got the Netherlands taking on Portugal. What a big game this is. How does this work in terms of numbers and stuff? Who has to get what?
Holland need a 2-0 win to go through.
Ah.
Yep.
But even with a 2-0 win, they also need Germany to beat the Danes.
Yep.
Right, okay. They've only beaten Portugal once in their last 10 meetings.
The last game they played was the in a competitive match, was the shambolic 2006 affair.
Brilliant
game. The last 16 when, what was it, four players were sent off?
16 yellow cards.
Mm. Wasn't Luis Figo could have been sent off, but it got missed by the referee. Probably there's a few different players in these two sides.
I remember Deco
now,
so. Van Bommel's bit of wrestling.
I really think Van Bommel was involved, wasn't he?
Yeah, funny. That was a terrific match.
Yeah, yeah.
For all the wrong reasons.
No, we don't like to see that.
No,
yeah. Yeah. You're not allowed to say that. Somewhere.
We do want to see this.
There you go. So Holland need to get a 2-0 and hope that Germany beat Denmark. And Portugal need to better the Danish result against Germany to make the last eight. They're boosted by the return, it says here, of the defender Miguel Lopez. But the main question, of course, is Ronaldo. 10 shots so far, yet to score. And he really was in woeful form midweek.
But if they play quite well, I thought they'll play quite well against the Danes, and without Ronaldo and with him missing lots of chances, that's almost a good sign, really.
And by the way, he's still not doing as badly as Messi did this time last year. That's just underlying that.
He'll score eventually, though. That's what he does. He shoots and shoots and shoots and shoots, and that's why he's so dangerous. Yeah. That's why he scores so many goals.
They won that game, yet it's almost as if they lost. Because this Ronaldo thing has dominated all the discussion afterwards. You forget that, they won the game.
And Nani looked really good in that game. Mm-hmm. Thought on the right.
Postiga as well, no?
Yeah, he looks like a nice finish. Striker, doesn't he?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Somebody should pick him up.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but Nani, you're right. Yeah. Okay, what about Holland? They're talking about changes, but they said that last time.
I think that point that Rafa was making earlier on about Van Bommel being absent when Schweinsteiger was making those passes, I think is quite key. I think he looked a bit spent to me. And De Jong, obviously, as everybody knows, can't provide those two, both defensive and attacking things that Van Bommel can. He looks a bit past it, and they need more protection for the defence as well.
Slightly overrated side, isn't it? I think they've got great attackers, but beyond that, Van Bommel and De Jong are so defensive, and the defence is pretty poor, which is quite strange that they'd then be relying on and playing so defensively. They wouldn't just, think, we have this great attack, we have these brilliant strikers, let's just go for it.
Yeah, it's funny, as you say, overrated based on what they've done in this championship, but 2 years ago they were in the World Cup final, the qualifying was brilliant, they scored bundles of goals.
Yeah, but who are they playing in qualifying? Not anyone true. Brilliant. In the World Cup, I think in the second round they played Slovakia, in the quarterfinals they got really lucky against Brazil, two fluky goals, and against Uruguay again they playing against a side without Suarez in it, and again it was a tight game. Against Spain they tried to just kick them off the pitch and eventually got done for it.
Yeah.
Van Bommel was 2 years younger as well.
Yeah.
Van Bommel and Affalay likely to be sacrificed to make way for Van der Vaart and Klaas-Jan Huntelaar, so they say. But as I say, there were murmurings of a similar nature before their last match, none of which actually came to pass. Well, since we're doing so well with our predictions, what do you think, Kevin?
I think the Dutch are going to do it.
Do you?
Yes.
At Portugal's expense, with the Germans going through?
Holland and Germany to go through, sorry.
Right.
2-0 win for Holland. And
that means Holland, if they go through second in the group, would be playing the Czechs.
Yes.
You might fancy that.
They'll probably win it.
Although there, I've done it again. I've undervalued the Czech. Classic mistake.
I'm not sure. I think Germany will definitely go through. Portugal are a really hard side to beat, especially when they play against big sides. They know how to make a game really boring and defensive, like we saw against Germany last week. I don't know. I think that Holland will struggle to beat them by two goals, even though they have the firepower.
It's true. They need the two, don't they? Hmm.
I thought the Dutch would go through from this group, and the way Robin van Persie took his goal, they can get goals from out of nothing. But I did really like watching the Portuguese the other day. I think they might just get what they need.
Right.
Then the Germans will go through.
And three other teams, by the sound of it.
No, I'm back in the Portuguese. I'm Portuguese in the
Portuguese.
Germans.
Yeah, you've talked me into the Portuguese as well, Jacob. We'll find out, eh? Sunday night. Are you back tomorrow as well, Jacob?
I'm back tomorrow.
Hey! All right, then. Well, we'll see how your bold prediction turns out when we return with Euro 2012 Football Daily Sunday night, Monday morning. In the meantime, many thanks to producer Ben, to Evan Fanning, to Jacob Steinberg and Paul McInnes, and of course to Raphael and Greg. And you, the listener, speak to you tomorrow.
Euro 2012 Football Daily. Woof.